This is Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, June is World Elder Abuse Awareness Month, an opportunity to raise awareness of elder fraud that results in significant financial loss. Patricia Rubio speaks to Lizanne Duhl, director of Sullivan County's Office for the Aging, about scams targeting older adults and tips to avoid them. We'll get an update from Sullivan 180 on their Empowering a Healthier Generation program. Science stories with Joe Johnson, a retired Port Jervis science teacher and Radio Catskill volunteer, about otters using tools in new ways, another new planet. And researchers say a new procedure that burns stomach lining may help decrease production of a hunger hormone. And the African Wildlife Foundation exhibit at HPAC tonight. We'll get a preview. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Today is day two of testimony in Hunter Biden's federal gun trial in Wilmington, Delaware. Defense attorneys will continue to cross-examine an FBI special agent. Hunter Biden's ex-wife is also expected to take the stand. The president's son is accused of lying about his drug addiction on a form to buy a gun. He has pleaded not guilty. There's mixed reaction in Congress to President Biden's executive order on immigration. It limits the number of migrants who can cross the border to seek asylum. Republicans say the effort is too little, too late. Democrats say Republicans blocked immigration legislation this year, and the president didn't have another choice. Immigration activists say they will take the matter to court. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas says the Biden administration is acting lawfully.
This executive action is taken in the context of all of the lawful pathways that we have built for individuals to lawfully, safely, and in an orderly way apply for asylum and gain the benefit of humanitarian relief in this country.
He spoke to NPR's Morning Edition. NASA will try again today to launch two astronauts to the International Space Station aboard a new spacecraft built by Boeing. As NPR's Jeff Brumfield reports, this will be the third launch attempt in about a month.
First, it was a stuck valve, then a small leak of helium gas, then one of the computers used to launch the rocket had an error. Now, finally, maybe, astronauts Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams will get their chance to ride Boeing's Starliner spacecraft to the final frontier. The Starliner is a gumdrop-shaped capsule about the size of a mid-sized SUV. It's designed to carry astronauts to and from the International Space Station, but the program is years behind schedule due to technical problems. The one thing that is cooperating is the weather. Forecasters say conditions are highly favorable for a launch. Jeff Brumfield, NPR News.
Stocks opened mixed this morning as Treasury yields fell to their lowest level in 2 months. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell about 100 points in early trading.
Signals of a softening U.S. labor market have sent Treasuries down and raised hopes the Federal Reserve will be able to lower interest rates later this year. Investors put the odds of a rate cut by the Fed's September meeting at about 2-1. That's up from about 50-50 a week ago. The appetite for artificial intelligence is driving demand for computer servers. Stock in Hewlett-Packard Enterprise got a boost after the company offered an upbeat sales forecast. Disney is preparing to invest up to $17 billion in its Florida theme parks, including a possible new park. The company struck a 15-year development agreement with a Florida governing board 3 months after settling a protracted legal battle with appointees of Governor Ron DeSantis. Scott Horsley, NPR News. Washington.
On Wall Street, the Dow is down 109 points. The Nasdaq is up about 130 points. You're listening to NPR News. Some of the British royals are presiding over D-Day commemorations today in southern England. They're at the port where UK forces launched their Normandy assault 80 years ago this week. NPR's Lauren Freyer reports from London.
King Charles took a break from his cancer convalescence, and Prime Minister Rishi Sunak took a break from his election campaign events to preside over a ceremony in Portsmouth Harbor. Actors in 1940s dress performed for World War II veterans, many of them 100 years old. The MC was actor Helen Mirren.
While the danger was grave, the courage was unflinching.
Portsmouth is where UK forces launched their assault on the Nazis in occupied Normandy, France, in one of the most decisive battles of World War II. King Charles, Queen Camilla, and other dignitaries head to France next for more memorials there tomorrow. Lauren Freyer, NPR News, London.
The city of Atlanta says it has finished repairing the break in the major water main, and officials say water has been restored in the Midtown area. But Atlanta officials are still urging people to boil water as pressure is restored to the water system. A major water main broke last Friday night. Rushing water surged into Atlanta streets. Excessive heat warnings persist today from California to Arizona and parts of Nevada. The National Weather Service says some areas could set new heat records today. There are excessive heat warnings up for southern Texas, too. Temperatures there could push well into the triple digits. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Fisher Investments. Fisher's dedicated team of specialists provide resources on investing, retirement income, estate planning, and more. Learn more at FisherInvestments.com. Investing in securities involves the risk of loss.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. June is World Elder Abuse Awareness Month, and today we're helping raise awareness of scams that target older adults. Scams against older consumers are on the rise as more people have turned to online methods of communication and scammers have expanded their tactics. According to the Federal Bureau of Investigation's 2023 Elder Fraud Report, scams targeting adults over the age of 60 have caused over $3.4 billion in losses in 2023. That's an increase of approximately 11% from the prior year. The average victim of elder fraud lost $33,915 due to these crimes. Patricia Rubio spoke to Lizanne Duell, the director of Sullivan County's Office for the Aging, about scams targeting older adults and tips to avoid them.
Unfortunately, these scams, as much as we report them and we notify people of these potential items going around, they continue to resurface. And they come in all sorts of different ways, and people get more sophisticated about how they deliver it. But especially with June 15th being World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, it's a very good time to remind people of some of the most common scams and also talk about hopefully ways to prevent them. So I can talk about some of the common types of scams if you'd like to start there.
Sure.
Very common one, romance scams. Scammers create fake online profiles to establish relationship with victims and steal their money. You've got prizes, sweepstakes, and lottery scams. They will call, email, text, or send a letter notifying the target that they've won a prize in exchange for money, financial, or other identifying information. Business or government imposters. So people who pretend that they're the IRS or Medicare or Social Security, charity or tech support. The IRS and Social Security and Medicare will never call you. They don't email you. They send you letters that are very official with the local office numbers that you can call and confirm it's from them. The grandparent scams. This one goes away, comes back, and it seems to just keep coming back. The scammers call and impersonate a grandchild or other close relative in a fake crisis situation. They ask for immediate financial assistance. In other cases, they may pretend to be a lawyer or emergency first responder, calling on behalf of a family member in trouble, asking for money or personal information. This unfortunately has gotten so many people, and I know all of the OFAs, all of the local government organizations are constantly reminding people that this is going around, and it seems to keep coming back, and like a new organization finds a way to perpetuate it and find people to do it. Investment scams. So investment scams claim you'll likely make a lot of money quickly or easily with little to no risk. You may encounter these scams on social media, infomercials, or online ads claiming big returns if you invest in financial markets, cryptocurrency, real estate, precious metals and coins, and other areas. Online shopping. Scammers often pose as real companies online, or they make up fake companies to try to get your money or personal information. They may post fake ads for things on social media or other websites, and even use a real company's logo to try to seem legitimate, but then they take your money and don't send what you ordered. And I've seen a lot of these myself personally. I get so many of these per day. If you haven't done business with a company before and you're getting a bunch of emails from them, that is usually a red flag. And there's always something a little bit off in the logo. So just if it doesn't look legit, delete, delete, delete is all I can keep saying. Gift card scams. You receive a call or a text message asking you to buy gift cards or other prepaid cards and share the card access information with the scammer. This is something that unfortunately has also been around long enough that a lot of stores like your Walgreens, your supermarkets have policies about gift cards and doing an extra layer of protection before they sell them, because this is a very common way that people will get access and they tell people you have to buy gift cards. If somebody's telling you to go buy a gift card, I can tell you right now that's a scam. That is never legitimate. The only person that should be initiating buying a gift card is you as a gift for somebody that you actually know. Healthcare scams. A scammer will try to sell you health insurance plans claiming to prevent, treat, cure diseases or other health conditions. The scammer's real intent is to steal insurance information, money, or both by getting you to provide personal information. So with that being said, there's the ones that are clearly fake. Like, you have this condition, we've got the miracle cure. That is always suspect. But along with that, you have a lot of health insurance marketing that is technically legitimate. They're allowed to do it, but it looks like it's coming from Medicare directly, or they're selling you insurance on TV from a famous personality saying, this is a great plan. It does all these things. They may not technically be scams or fraud, but they are misleading for sure. And that's why we have a whole department in our office called HICAP, our Health Insurance Information Counseling and Assistance Program, that is devoted to giving people very objective, researched insurance information for their specific situation. No insurance plan is one size fits all. There are different choices out there, especially during open enrollment or annual election period, that is very tailored to everyone's personal situation because everyone's got different medications, specialists they see, and all of those individualized problems. So that I cannot caution people enough. They should definitely give our office a call when they get health insurance information that looks too good to be true, because they may already have a plan that's working very well for them. And if they switch, they may not be able to switch back. So I cannot stress that enough. But there's a lot more I can go into and some resources, but I definitely want to open it up for more questions.
Yeah, no, definitely. You hit on a lot of them. I actually recently saw one that came to my father's mail. He's an older adult. It was one like his warranty was running out on his mortgage, and he had to call to get information to extend the warranty and stuff like that. And my father doesn't have a mortgage in his house. That was my next question. What are some of the red flags that folks should look out that they're saying, hey, this is potentially a scam?
Sure. You're absolutely right. Text messages from strangers is a really good tactic that they use, or a text or email from one of your accounts was suspended. That is always a red flag. Fake business emails, social media friend requests, pop-up ads, infomercials, or other ads on social medias, phone calls from seemingly familiar numbers, or QR codes directing you to cryptocurrency ATMs or robocalls. These are just some of the red flags. And you can, whenever you get something that seems like emergent and it comes to you in a way that seems like if you don't do something right away, they're trying to scare you, the first thing you need to do is really pause and reflect, because that they want you to act without thinking. So pause. Everything, unless your house is on fire, is not an emergency. So pause and think before you do anything. Scam tip, I'd say number two, understand the psychology. So these are people that are going to ingratiate themselves. So if people are too solicitous and too nice, that is usually a red flag. If they immediately sound like they're selling you a car, I would definitely pause. Always confirming information. So they should, if they have this information, if they say that your mortgage needs to have something done to it, they should have that information if they are the person from the company. You don't confirm with them, they should confirm with you. Report it. So you can, it doesn't hurt when in doubt, you report it either to your local police, the attorney general, you could call our office to help. These are all ways to make sure that it doesn't happen to somebody else. Limit your details. So again, if somebody is calling to say that something is going to be canceled or they're coming to arrest you, ask them to confirm all the details that are the reason why they're doing this. And then contact the business. So again, the simple ones, the IRS, Social Security, you should be able to find the local access number for these businesses and call them yourself and say, have you been trying to contact me? They don't contact you the ways that these scammers are doing it through email and through phone. They will contact you through official U.S. mail, and those letters are very, very clear that they're legitimate. Those are definitely some tips.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, which is great tips. Like I said, it's coming so much now. I feel like we've talked about scams I talked about scams years ago before everything. But now technology has advanced so much that we're getting on the phone. I get usually every day at least two texts. It makes it sound like they're from the post office saying, we're tracking your package and it got lost somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they give you a text and it says, hey, click here. And I haven't sent the package or knowing that the UPS won't text me directly. But I can definitely see that someone gets that text, an older person or someone who may not be that savvy, and click on the link. And almost all of a sudden, you know, you're in this dark hole of giving out your information. And very scary how people prey on other folks.
It absolutely. And like you said, they're getting savvier. And I myself, like you, get so many texts and emails per day that are not legitimate. And the same thing when the phone rings, you don't see a number you recognize, you let it go to voicemail. If it's super important, they will leave a message. They will contact you by mail if it's super important and it's not somebody that you're expecting. So you ignore those phone numbers you don't recognize. Ignore those texts. You can delete them from your phone. You could block numbers. If you have a smartphone, there's ways that you can block the numbers from calling you. Yeah, they're going to find another one to call you from. You block that one too, or don't answer it. And the minute you answer the phone gives them an entry, gives them a way that they know that, okay, we've got a live one, we're going to keep at them. So yeah, just don't answer the phone. If you don't know who it is, they will find a way to get in touch with you that is legitimate. Yeah. And ignore those unsolicited links in emails and texts. Do not click on them. And hang up. If you receive a call from an unknown number asking for personal information, just hang up. If it's a company or a government agency, contact the source and through their trusted phone numbers. That is definitely one of the largest ways that you can avoid being scammed.
We talked about, you know, how technology has evolved, but technology has evolved also for the good. I'm noticing I have an iPhone, and I'm noticing that if I get a suspicious number, Apple is already telling me a potential scam. And it highlights, it says spam risk, or if I get text, it says potentially spam risk. So it does help out somewhat saying, and when I see those automatically, I just don't answer.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I had a question about is it helpful to report something? Like, if you think a scam is happening, if we report it, does that anything happen? Who do we report it to? That's the first question. But is that, does anything? I don't know if it does or not, but.
I think it does. The Office of the Attorney General actually has a charities registry, and they need to know when people, they also have ways of reporting this. There's through their website. If you call us, we will help guide you to the right places to report. And when people call us, and people do, to let us know that they've been targeted by a scam, it gives us a heads up, because we may get other calls and we'll already have confirmed it's not legit. Last year, we received a bunch of people reaching out to us about a mailer they received that Again, like I had discussed earlier, was not technically a scam, but it was misleading insurance information. They made it look like it was from Medicare and that they had to change their plan. And it was actually from another third-party insurance company, and it was a marketing tool, but it was not from Medicare, and it was not a legitimate update this. It was, okay, we want to get in touch with you so we can change your plan. So yes, reporting it to your local authorities. If it's somebody, the grandparent scam especially, I would definitely call the police, because they have been able to, like I said, as quickly as they find who's doing it, another one pops up, but they need to find them. And I think there's a lot of folks who don't report because they may feel some shame or embarrassment, mm-hmm. and they shouldn't, because we are all, no matter our age, we are all susceptible to the onslaught of people trying to scam us and take our personal information and use it against us. And if you don't report, it's going to happen to somebody else. So if anybody takes anything away from this, I hope it enables them and empowers them to report it.
Yeah, absolutely. Lisanne, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on you want folks to know about?
Well, we are always a resource, and I always say our number a million times, 845-807-0241, Sullivan County Office for the Aging. We are here for all of these resources, and when in doubt, check it out. And I thank you so much for your time.
When in doubt, check it out. I like that. We're talking to Lisanne Newell from the Office of Aging for Sullivan County, letting us know what to do if you think you may have been scammed or received a scam text or mail. Thank you so much for joining us on the program for talk about this really important thing that's happening to all of us, really.
Thank you so much.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
And again, there's more information about the Office for the Aging at sullivanny.us. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Sullivan 180 and their Empowering a Healthier Generation program kicking into gear. We'll get more from Megan Mullally-Gore right after this. This is Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org, and from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Hi, it's Rosie Starr, host of Farm and Country. Join us Saturdays at 10 a.m. on Radio Catskill for stories about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. Feed your ears some good radio produce. Listen local.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Sullivan 180's Empowering a Healthier Generation program engages Sullivan County, New York school districts in promoting health and wellness among students, staff, parents, and their communities. Joining us now with the latest on the program is Megan Mullally-Gore from Sullivan 180's Empowering a Healthier Generation program. Hello.
Good morning. We could call it EHG for short.
MMG with EHG.
Yes.
I like it. Let's talk about what's going on with the program. And let's remind folks, I mean, I kind of gave a brief little introduction there. Let's remind folks what this program intends to do.
Yes. Okay. So the Empowering a Healthier Generation program, the EHG program, is in its third year. We provide stipends to a Healthier Generation advisor in every school building in Sullivan County. So all of the public schools, there's 8 districts, and we have BOCES, so we'll round that up to 9, but there's 21 school buildings. So we have a human in every school building who is working on health and wellness for both students and staff that we stipend, and then we invite them to apply for grants through Sullivan 180 at different levels. And those grants are meant to go toward health and wellness initiatives within each school building.
So we're going to talk about some of those grants today.
Yeah.
And some of the great work that's being done in each of these schools in the county. So the school grant, that's something that's up to $4,000.
Yes.
At the RJK Middle School in Monticello, they've got their Spartan Club initiative. What's going on there?
So we funded them last year, and typically we don't fund the same initiative twice, but this one has been wildly successful. So the Spartan Club is based on the Spartan Race, which is at Bethel Woods this weekend, this coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday. So they have a wonderful Healthier Generation advisor, Scott Cooper, who started the Spartan Club. He brought in the book, The Spartan Way. The kids read it. They come together once a week to train throughout the year, and then they all go to the race together, and they learn about perseverance and what grit is and getting out of their comfort zone. And you really got to get out of your comfort zone in that race. You're jumping over fire. You're climbing walls. So when he came back to us this year and said, will you give us a grant for this again? He said, I have a Spartan 2.0. And he brought it to the next level by inviting high schoolers to be coaches and mentors. So we're really, really excited that we were able to fund them again. Last year, they had 50 students participate. This year, they had 50 students participate in the club. They have 40 students racing, and they have 80 adults.
Oh, good.
So the students were invited to bring their parents and community members. So it's really spreading rather far. So they're racing this weekend. The students will race on Saturday and the adults will race on Sunday at Bethelwood Center for the Arts.
What do you think it is about this particular thing that's getting people so charged up? Is it this idea of like this competition part and then the kind of Spartan aspect of it?
I think that it's the individual competition. So the competition with yourself, getting out of your comfort zone, knowing that the only person you have to let down is yourself. So it's a little bit different than club sport, or excuse me, than school sports. They are able to participate in both, but this is all about you and all about the great gains you're able to make for yourself.
Yeah, it's like a local American Ninja Warrior
kind of idea
or something, right? Yeah. So then you've got this other level, competition grants for schools. Those go up to $10,000. Let's talk about some of the schools and what they're doing.
Sure. Okay. So we have two of Monticello schools in the running this year. We have Cook Elementary and we have Rutherford. Then we have Livingston Manor High School and Eldred High School. So we made a significant change to our program in that we've extended the timeline to 2 years. So this past year, they sent in their applications and they started implementation. The implementation will go through the next school year, and then we'll have a big award ceremony as we've had in the past. So the competition schools are going for that first place award, which is $75,000, and a second place award of $50,000. And these schools are implementing some wonderful projects. So Cook School at Monticello, that's again an elementary school, they're doing outdoor learning space. Eldred High School is doing a fantastic composting program. So they want to get rid of a lot of the waste that's coming through the lunchroom. Livingston Manor High School is expanding their breakfast and lunch program. So they've upgraded to a really fancy salad bar. And then they expanded their breakfast program by creating a grab-and-go station because they want more kids to participate. And then Rutherford School is working on social-emotional learning. So over the years, they've had two curriculums, the PBIS, which might be familiar to some people who work within the school, and then the RULER program.
What is the PBIS?
So it's the social emotional and PBIS and RULER is about the way that children are behaving in school and, you know, working on their social emotional skills on what they're able to, what is appropriate for school and not appropriate. And if there's some, if they have to step in, take some time out, go to another room. So they've updated this room that is meant for them to take a mindfulness break. And they're also getting other staff members and maybe even the school bus drivers up to date on what happens in the classroom and letting parents know. So there's a continuum. There's a thread that goes through so that they know what discipline looks like and what's appropriate and just gives tips on how to stay consistent with that.
I think what's great about this program is that when we talk about empowering a healthier generation, you're not just talking about food or food choices. You're talking about the mental aspect of it. You're talking about the environmental aspect of it. We've got composting going on. You've got outdoor initiatives going on, as well as these mental health initiatives.
Yeah, it's really important to be very well-rounded for sustainability, but also because there's just so many different aspects of our lives that that need this type of attention and this type of work. So what the EHG program has done is it's given school districts a different vantage point to look at students. Years ago, it was all about academics, but the world is changing. We have kids coming to school who are hungry, kids who are coming to school who don't have any outdoor space. They might live in an apartment complex. There's no green in their life. The schools are these safe zones that are providing them with sometimes their only meals of the day or their only opportunity to get outside. So what we're hoping to do with the EHG program is to focus our attention on youth, to take preventative measures and just work on that healthier generation.
Well, I'm glad you pointed that out about the outdoor space aspect of it too. We live in this rural area and we see a lot
of greenery.
It's beautiful. Yeah. But then you have to realize that like in some of these more quote urban type centers of our areas, of our county, at least in Sullivan County, Monticello and Liberty, for example, there are apartment complexes like you would find in other places that are have, you know, a higher density urban population.
Definitely.
And those kids may not have all the outdoor opportunities. So to have that as well. I also would like to know if the Livingston Manor High School would let outsiders come to their fancy salad bar. Okay, let's talk about the district impact grant. Is that something new?
Yes, it's new. So as we changed our timeline, we also brought forth these $20,000 grants. So larger grants for the district to focus on. So they were awarded to Roscoe Central School this year and to Livingston Manor Central School. Roscoe, speaking of inviting the community in, they've had a great fitness trail that the community is able to utilize, has been utilizing. They're putting equipment on that fitness trail. So you're able to walk it. You're able to get on. Have you ever seen one of those open air ellipticals?
Oh, yeah.
So cool. And it runs by the water.
Oh, cool.
So that actually leads to a municipal park on the other side. So they're really trying to invite the community in. So that's what they focused on for their district impact grant. They also had some spare money, so they purchased what's called the walking classroom, and it's a device that kids wear where they're listening to the lesson and they're walking on their beautiful trail, so they're outside. So alternative ways of learning. And then Livingston Manor is expanding once again their lunch program. So I don't know if you've heard all the buzz, but Livingston Manor lunch is pretty phenomenal.
I'm hearing a little bit more about it. I'm a little jealous about that.
Yes, yes.
Coming up on lunch soon.
I know. So they, outside of what we've funded, they've gotten money from Cornell Cooperative Extension, who is a wonderful partner, and U.S. Ag and Markets through the USDA grants. And they're baking their own bread. So they have fresh baked bread every day. They make their soup from scratch. They make stock. It's just, their lunches are just phenomenal. So we're learning from them and we're hoping to bring it to the other Sullivan County schools. So there's a lot of collaborative work that's going on.
Well, and the collaborative work we're talking about here was involved students. It's not,
as you said,
it doesn't, you have people from Sullivan White 80 EHG in each of the schools, but they're not coming and going, do this. This is like a thing where you're saying, hey, what can we do? And then these ideas are being organically generated from the student population.
For sure. One thing that Livingston Manor does is they have QR codes up in their lunchroom. So kids at any time, whether it's breakfast or lunch, can scan that code and have a survey about how they felt about that lunch.
Oh, wow.
So they're making changes in the moment.
Real life Yelp. I also like that they're installing a permanent water bottle filling station in the cafeteria. That's tackling a couple of things. You're avoiding plastic waste.
Yes.
And you're getting hydrated. You're being healthy with what you're consuming in terms of water, too.
For sure.
All right. Let's talk about those competition grants. You mentioned that there is this competition with each of the schools.
Mm-hmm.
Who are in competition for what? And then, you know, the ultimate. These are the people that already are getting
it. Yeah, so they already won.
Oh, they won. I'm sorry.
So, that's okay. So we have phase two funds. So the phase two funds are all the people who won last year. So we had four schools in competition last year. The first place award went to Sullivan West Elementary School. They did they focused on social emotional learning with a Miss Kendra curriculum, which is phenomenal. And then the second place award, $50,000, went to Fallsburg. So those are ongoing projects, but now they're focusing these larger grants on things like Sullivan West Elementary is installing a beautiful fitness station, a fitness center within their elementary school. They've already got one at the high school, but we want to make sure that there's accessibility to people on this side of the district. So that's the project that they're focusing on. And then Fallsburg is focusing on a very large outdoor learning place. So they have a courtyard, and they're bringing in all sorts of tables and chairs so that classrooms can move outside and they can use it for community meetings and stuff like that.
And then there's the competition for the other grants that are already going on. That'll happen later, right?
Yes, so, okay, yes. So that'll be in 2025.
Got it. Okay. Let's hold on that.
Sure.
We'll talk about that later.
Yes.
But let's talk about how people could get involved if they wanted to or learn more about EHG, because this is such great stuff that's going on. And maybe there are other people listening outside the county that are thinking they could take this into their schools.
Yeah. So please visit our website. It's Sullivan180.org. And you could look at all of our programs, including the Empowering a Healthier Generation program. One way that a community member who's a resident of Sullivan County can get involved is go on to our Empowering a Healthier Generation page. And there's a clickable org chart that will tell you who your wellness coordinator is in your district, who your Healthier Generation advisor is in your local school building, and you could join a committee. So if this is something that excites you or you have a skill, you are welcome to join those committees.
And you have opportunities for people that might want to be even more involved. You guys are hiring?
We are hiring. It's really exciting. It's always fun to expand our team. So visit Sullivan180.org and go to About Us and then join the team. There's two positions that are available right now. One is a Healthier Generation Coordinator that works on my team, the EHG team, that goes directly into the schools and provides mentoring and coaching to those advisors. And then, really exciting, the Mental Health Program Youth Mental Health Program Manager. So you could read the job descriptions there, and we are accepting applications. Bilingual Spanish is preferred. But we're really thrilled to be in a position where we can expand our team.
All right. We've been talking to Megan Mullally-Gore from Sullivan 180 about the Empowering a Healthier Generation program. Again, Sullivan 180 is the nonprofit working for the health of Sullivan County, and more information at Sullivan180.org. MMG with the EHG. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We'll take a break. And when we come back, some science stories that have been catching our eye. Joe Johnson is here right after this. This is Radio Chatskill.
NEPA Gives is June 6th and 7th, 2 days to show your support of Radio Catskills, Honesdale Studio, and other great participating nonprofit organizations in Northeast Pennsylvania. On June 6th or 7th, visit NEPAGives.org and make a donation to Radio Catskill. All giving ends 7 p.m. on June 7th, so make your gift on time. You don't need to be from Northeast Pennsylvania to participate, and any amount of support is appreciated. NEPAGives.org.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week we spend the hour with the one, the only, Martin Yan. For 40 years, the host of Yan Can Cook has brought Chinese and Asian cuisines into the homes of Americans. We talk with him about his life and journey. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Joe Johnson is a retired Port Jervis science teacher. He's also a Radio Catskill volunteer, and he brings us science stories that have caught his eye and our eye. Today, he's talking to us about otters using tools in new ways, another new planet discovered, and researchers have to say that they've discovered a procedure that burns stomach lining that may help decrease production of a hunger hormone.
There's a new weight loss treatment. I read this article in Science News on the May 14th issue, and it details a small pilot study that was going to be presented at the Digestive Disease Conference in Washington on the 19th. And what these scientists did was they inserted an endoscope, which, as you may know, is a long, thin camera with presumably a laser into the stomach. And what they did was they burned away part of the upper stomach lining. And this is a part of the stomach lining that produces a hormone called ghrelin. And ghrelin is a hormone that makes you hungry. Mm. It sends a signal to your brain that you're hungry. So by burning this away, by ablating it, this is called a gastric fundus mucosal ablation is the name of the procedure. Less ghrelin was produced. And they think they found about a 45% reduction in this hormone. And now this was a very small study. You have to understand there were 10 women that were part of the study, but they lost almost 8% of their body weight, an average of about 19 pounds. And, you know, this is something that is non-surgical. It's no drugs. And so they're looking at it for a couple of reasons. They're thinking, you know, could this help somebody coming off Wegovy or Ozempic? Could this be used as a transitioning therapy? Or could it be a standalone therapy?
You mentioned that coming off of it because you can't stay on it forever.
No, that's what I understand.
Yeah. It just sounds sort of harsh, burning the stomach.
It does. There were some side effects, some mild nausea, and nothing really serious, though. You know, the stomach lining doesn't have any nerve endings in it, so you're not going to feel it. But it did have a couple of side effects. Now, this could really help people who have high blood pressure or high cholesterol or diabetes just take that, you know, first step down the path towards have those conditions better.
This is a small study, an experimental study.
Yes.
But there's things like this that have happened before that burn off ghrelin or reduce the amount of, I'm saying it wrong.
Ghrelin,
like bariatric surgery.
Well, so they found that the bariatric surgery, if they did it one way where they actually removed part of the lining surgically, that it would have a very similar effect. However, that's a surgical procedure. There's a long recovery. And this is something that basically is done as an outpatient on a daily basis.
Certainly seems like there might be more study around this.
Yeah, this was, like I said, this was a very small study. They've only looked at these women 6 months down the road. And so, you know, indications are that it's going to work, but they'll definitely follow up with this and maybe try it on a larger study group. And certainly follow those original 10 women.
Let's go out to space. We like to go out to space and see what's new. New in space?
One of my favorite places, yes. So there was an article in the journal Nature on May 15th about a new planet that was discovered. And this planet orbits a type of star that most people are not familiar with. It's called an M-class dwarf, sometimes called a red dwarf star. Now, red dwarf stars are very, very dim. And so you can't see them with your naked eye. Even though Proxima Centauri, the closest star to the Earth other than the Sun, is a red dwarf, we can't see it. We can see the planets going around it, but with your eye, I'm saying you can't see it. So this is a device, or I should say it's an organization called Speculos, which is an acronym for Search for Planets Eclipsing Ultra Cool Stars.
Okay.
It's an international effort. And it's a network of automatic telescopes that are studying these stars. And the way they discover planets is the planets transit. They go in front of the star, and so we see the brightness of the star dip a little bit. And from that dip, we can tell the size of the planet, you know, by studying many of them. We can tell you the size of the planet, how far it is away from its parent star. Now, red dwarfs make up about 60 to 85%, depending on who you're talking to, of all of the stars in the Milky Way. And yet you and I have never seen one because they're too dim. Now, why are they dim? Why are they red? Because of their surface temperature. It's kind of like metal. When you heat metal up, it starts to glow a dull red, and then it gets orange, and then it gets whiter. Well, as the temperature of the star changes, or different stars have different temperatures, they have different colors. And so these are only about 6,300 degrees Fahrenheit compared to almost 10,000 Fahrenheit for the Sun.
Can this planet support life, or could it have supported life?
Probably not, because it's orbiting extremely close to its star, to this parent star. Its orbital period, its year, is about 17 hours. And so, you know, on Earth, it's 365 and a quarter days. But this goes around its star in about 17 hours. So it's orbiting very, very close. The surface, they calculate to be about 530 degrees Fahrenheit. And they also think that it gets about 16 times more energy at the surface than the Earth does from the Sun.
It's amazing to find that still discovering planets.
Absolutely.
It keeps you remembering we are not alone, or no, we couldn't be alone.
We may not be alone. Now, there's been about 5,000 exoplanets discovered so far. An exoplanet is a planet that orbits a sun other than the – or a star other than the Sun, I should say. But this is the third stellar system, or I should say solar system, that this project has discovered. They discovered the TRAPPIST systems. There's about seven Earth-sized planets about 40 light-years away that orbit this M-class or this red dwarf. However, they're just too close. They're not going to support life either.
What does it tell us about the solar system or science when you discover these things, beyond me just saying, oh, we're not alone? There's definitely some scientific value.
There's a lot of things that we don't know about this universe. I knew about M-class dwarfs. I'd read about them, but I never had even thought about there being a planet about them, orbiting them. The coolest thing to me about these M-class dwarfs is because they burn so at lower temperature, they last a long time. Our own sun is going to last a total of perhaps 10 billion years before it goes nova and then eventually fades down to a white dwarf. These will last on the order, they think, of about 100 billion years. And so that, to me, that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things out there that we don't understand.
Yeah. And otters are making some news. Interesting, because the stories about otters using tools,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen some documentaries or science stories about otters using like a rock, but this is talking about how they use these tools to go locate foods they may have lost or they're a competition with others for.
Right, right, right. So this was an article. It was in the May 16th issue of the journal Science. Now, as you were saying, otters are really well-known tool users. We've seen those documentaries where they're floating on their back and breaking apart a clam with a rock on their belly. Sometimes they even use glass bottles instead of a rock. But that's not their preferred prey. Sea urchins and abalone, which are very easy to break apart, are the preferred prey of these otters. They're very high calories. They're easy to eat. They're easy, it's like fast food for otters. But the increasing populations, there's been a tremendous conservation effort. This is Monterey Bay in California we're talking about, by the way. In the 60s, there were about 50 of these otters left, and now they're up to about 3,000. So this increased population has led to a lot of competition for food. And what they're finding is that these otters are not finding the sea urchins and the abalone anymore. So they've had to turn to other food sources like clams and snails and crabs. And what these scientists, which, by the way, from the University of Texas and I think the University of Washington, what they wanted to know was how tool usage would adapt, how they would adapt tool usage to these new foods. And what they found is that the female otters use them more often and more effectively because presumably the female otters being smaller, they have less of a bite force, so they have to use the tools. But the way they figure this out is they have about 196 radio tagged otters, and so they employed otter spotters to go out and watch the otters and figure out what they're eating and observe what they're eating, write it down, and they found that they are adapting to these new food sources rather well.
I think that if I lived in Monterey Bay, I would be an otter spotter. That sounds like
sounds like a great job.
A great job. Plus you get to watch these otters. Now, also what's interesting about this was that some otters don't use the tools. Some mm-hmm. of them are just like, well, I'll just eat the soft stuff. I don't want to work that hard.
Well, the problem is they're putting themselves at a big advantage because they're eliminating food sources from their diet. Like I said, there's a lot of competition for their original food, the sea anemones and the sea urchins and the abalone. And so by moving to these alternate food sources, they have, certainly increased their chances for survival.
The tools also help them with their teeth. It helps preserve their teeth because
yes.
they're not having to overuse
yes.
those.
What they found is that the ones that were not using the tool had visible tooth damage. And so the females are being the smart ones here. They're using the tools and keeping their teeth. Tool usage has been documented in a lot of different animals, chimpanzees, all kinds of animals are using tools. Crows use tools.
Always fascinating. Joe Johnson, thank you so much.
That's why I like science. It's always new and always interesting.
Always evolving.
Thanks, Tim.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center and the African Wildlife Foundation are presenting short films and photographs tonight in an exhibit highlighting AWF's unique approach to achieving successful conservation results in Africa. We'll learn more next.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl. And the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. For more than 60 years, the African Wildlife Foundation has used the principles of leading for wildlife, living with wildlife, and caring for wildlife to ensure the future of Africa's iconic species and improve the livelihoods of the continent's people. Tonight at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, AWF will show short films crafted by African filmmakers, followed by a moderated panel discussion of AWF experts from Kenya and Zimbabwe, and in the HPAC lobbies, images from the internationally recognized Mkapa African Wildlife Photography Exhibition will be on view, highlighting prints from the nearly 10,000 submissions on which the award winners were judged. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to HPAC's Christina Antizo about the exhibit.
Good morning, Christina, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, there's an interesting event coming up, yet another interesting event at the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center. It's the Benjamin Mkapa African Wildlife Photography Annual Awards Exhibit. It's Wednesday, yeah. June 5th, 6 to 8:30 in Hurleyville. Can you tell us a little about this exhibit? Who's sponsoring it, first of all?
Yes, I would love to. So right now we are sponsoring it. The Hurleyville Performing Arts Center is sponsoring the whole event. We are still, looking for sponsors if anybody is interested. But we're really excited to bring it to Hurleyville, to bring it upstate. This exhibition has been on tour for 2 years now, and it's only been shown in museums. It was previously in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, before coming to us, which we received it 2 weeks ago. So we've been unpacking it and getting everything all ready for the opening reception next week.
And what can folks expect if they go to the reception?
Oh, so super exciting. So all of the images that are displayed will be available for purchase at the end of the tour, which will end in September. So these images will be available for purchase, which is amazing. We will have some silent auction items. Two of the images will be on the silent auction, one being the winning one, which is the gorilla, and the other one being the lion. We will also have six short films of African voices that'll play in our cinema, and that'll be followed with a panel from AWF, which includes some of their staff from Zimbabwe and Kenya that will be here on the panel to answer questions about the different images, where they were taken, the winning images. We also, there's different sections. There's a teen section, and the images are amazing. So they'll be able to go over all of that and really kind of touch base on the importance of African-led solutions to wildlife conservation and biodiversity. So that is a really, really big part there. So we're super excited to have it. There will be a cash bar. And once this opening reception is done, our plan is to open it for free to the public for the next 3 months.
Wonderful. And for folks who might not know, AWF is for the African Wildlife Foundation, correct?
Yes, correct.
And this is under the aegis of the African Wildlife Foundation.
Yes, it is. They partnered with the Nature's Best Photography, and so they have been traveling over the last 2 years to different museums and presenting it there for viewing.
So I was reading that part of the goal of seeing things in the visual form would be to help start the conversation.
Exactly, exactly, 100%. And when you see these images, like I saw photographs of the images, but as we're unpacking them and we're starting to install them on the walls, these images are so profound and beautifully amazing that they really kind of just reach inside of you. And it's definitely the most amazing exhibit that I've ever seen. So,
well, I happened to be perusing the African Wildlife Foundation and a couple of other sites, and some of the images are really, really striking in a different way than most nature photography of Africa. There's a personal component.
Yes, 100%. So there was over 10,000 submissions.
Whoa.
for this, and they narrowed it down to 46 that they chose from there. So there was a lot of different submissions to go through, from teen to digital kind of altered photos. So it is a whole wide range. We have, it's not just animals, it's nature, it's people. So it really tells a story when you're walking through and you look at all the images.
The exhibit is named after the former president of Tanzania, who was an active African wildlife conservationist.
So that just ties it all in together as well. So when we say that there's been a lot of effort put into this, and the AWF, African Wildlife Foundation, their team, you know, went through all of these submissions and were able to really pick some really amazing ones. I can only imagine the ones that were not picked out of 10,000. These are phenomenal.
And what struck you about them?
So there's one that I have my eye on specifically. It's one that is a lion, and it's just, it, when you look at that specific image, you don't know if, is she hunting? Is she scared? So it really, it, each image tells a story. And the reason why we are bringing it here to Hurleyville is Janet Karras, who is our board chair and president of the Hurleyville Performing Arts Center, is a huge supporter of the African Wildlife Foundation. She's been to Africa multiple times. She actually just went with AWF to India on a tiger safari. So she's a huge supporter. And so when this came about, she immediately was like, we have to have it here in Hurleyville for Sullivan County residents, Orange County residents, Ulster, any residents, because there's a lot of people in the county who can't get to the city to see exhibits like this. So bringing it here is just another added aspect for the community, for them to have something that they normally wouldn't be able to go see, maybe because of transportation, or maybe they can't travel with their children. And so they will have it locally for them to be able to view.
Yes, and I think also one of the goals is to demonstrate through the stories and the photography African-led solutions to the conservation issue in Africa.
Yes, 100%. So, you know, this helps get the word out. This helps raise, you know, awareness for what they're doing over there. So that is our, you know, ultimate goal, is just to bring it to the community and raise awareness all around.
Okay, so let's review. It's going to have its opening on Wednesday, June 5th, 6 to 8:30, and then it will be on display until?
Right until Labor Day.
Until Labor Day. So, oh, goodness. So the community here has the whole summer to see it. That's wonderful.
Yes.
Really wonderful.
Yes, and I do want to mention at the opening reception that we will have live music. We have a performer by the name of Justin Sutherland, who's going
to be... Oh, Justin. I know Justin. Yes.
You know Justin. So, yeah, so he's going to be performing for us that evening. So we're super excited to have him. He's phenomenal. So we're very lucky.
Oh, good. I do exercise with his mom, Justine.
Oh, I love that.
Okay. Well, it's a small world here.
It is.
With a lot of talent.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, Christina. So I wish you a wonderful event, and I am happy to have had the time to share this with our listeners and make them aware that they have the whole summer to go see it. And if they want to see some wonderful photography, I saw some wonderful images on the African Wildlife Foundation. So it's worth it to take a peek.
And just a reminder, too, that all of these images are available for purchase. And so whomever comes to the opening reception gets their first dibs and their first choice at the opening reception. So,
okay. Well, thank you again, Christina.
Thank you, Valerie. I appreciate your time.
Culture reporter Valerie Manzi speaking to HPAC's Christina Antizzo. That'll do it for us. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include SUNY Sullivan, a community college in the Sullivan Catskills focused on preparing students for the future. More information at sunysullivan.edu. Livingston Manor, dining, shopping, and the arts at the gateway to the Catskill Park. LivingstonManorNY.com. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
The Daily draws on the unrivaled quality and expertise of the New York Times Global Newsroom. Our mission is to tell stories more deeply and to incorporate a new kind of transparency. Weekday evenings at 6:30 here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.